The Pledge of Allegiance. Trustee Criddle, can you please lead us in the pledge? There is one correction on the agenda I'd like to bring to your attention. If you would turn to page 13, please. About midway down, we have a person's name, Antoli Russ. Says that it's a database administrator, DO, probationary, 7/19/20. It should be 7/19/21. So. Announcement of action taken in closed session. There was no action to announce from closed session. Comments from board members. Trustee Hasty.
Good evening, all. I would just like to welcome everyone back. Thank you for your ongoing, tireless, even though we get tired, enthusiasm, and what you're bringing to the classroom and to the staff and to the community is so valuable. Thank you.
Trustee Davis.
I would just echo what Ms. Hasty has presented. I know it's not been your average summer, so I really appreciate everyone sticking to getting us moving forward. Thank you.
Just one thought before we go to the next board members. Are there any other public comment cards that people would like to have turned in? Those are supposed to be turned in prior to the meeting, but it's kind of a new process for a lot of us, so just wanted to double check. Thank you. Trustee Doug Criddle.
Yes, I'd like to thank all of the teachers and staff administration for preparation and what we've been looking forward to for a long time of getting back to in-person learning. So that is a good thing. Thank you for your patience. Thank you for your professionalism. And I look forward to a great school year this year. Thank you.
Trustee Gary Criddle.
I think everybody here else has said everything that I would want to say. Welcome back. It's starting to look like normal again, although I can't see your smiling faces. Eventually we'll get there, so thank you.
It's kind of like we're all coming back for Thanksgiving or something, or Christmas dinner. I don't know. So I'd like to thank all of our employees for their hard work and dedication in preparing our district for the start of school tomorrow. I mean, in every person's role, it is important to try to get our schools and our kids back in session. The other day, I was reflecting a little bit on the pandemic since March of 2019, and it's been my belief that I've been living by two guiding principles. And the first guiding principle is to follow the guidance. And the second is to provide as much in-person instruction to students as possible. By the end of the school year last year, most of our students were allowed to get back into school 4 days of in-person instruction if they wished to. Now, thinking about the school year for 21-22, and the guiding principles have not changed for me. One is to follow the guidance. And two is to provide as much in-person instruction for students as we possibly can. So it's very exciting to me, starting tomorrow, all of our students are provided the opportunity to attend in-person instruction 5 days a week. All they have to do is to follow the guidance of wearing a face covering while indoors. Not all day, just while they're indoors. Thank you. Opportunity for employee organizations to address the board. Marysville Unified Teachers Association. Angela?
Good evening, Mr. Rasmussen and the rest of the board. Angela Stiegel, president of the Marysville Unified Teachers Association. Interesting and nice to be back. So in a room, all looking at each other instead of in a Zoom, all staring at each other. First of all, this evening, unfortunately, I would like to kind of harken back to comments that at least a few of us made at our last board meeting, and I would like to thank all of our firefighters. They are working tirelessly and mercilessly, and for those of you that don't know, my family has a cabin at Lake Almanor, and I have had academic decathlon retreats there, and so I know Greenville and know it well, and so our hearts and thoughts are with Greenville and the other communities up there, Indian Valley, Canyon Dam, Prattville, Chester, places like that, and Lassen. And so a lot of firefighters working really, really hard, a lot of first responders and law enforcement. And so I'd like to thank them and send them all of our strength and positive energy. Also, it is the night before school starts. And so I want to thank all of the teachers that are working almost burning the midnight oil. We're getting close to that hour, trying to get ready for a return to normal-ish school, which is going to be it's going to be a great year. There's a lot of really positive energy, kind of nervous energy also in our teacher meetings. So a lot of teachers, administrators, entire school staffs, clear throughout the district that have been working really hard and continue to work really hard to make tomorrow and the rest of the school year amazing. So I want to thank all of those people, including the teachers. Also, just as a total side note, when we're doing the board meeting calendar for future reference, could we please not have a board meeting the night before school starts? This is at least 2 years in a row, maybe three. And so those of us that are wanting to be back at our school sites right now because we've got the laundry list of 900 things back there to do. But our teachers look forward to things. We also want to thank our parents, families, our students, and our community for sticking with us and also looking forward to this amazing year we've got going. I'm hopeful that our current negotiations will be resolved and be resolved soon, very quickly. And so with that note, keep it short and sweet, and thank the board as well, and everybody have a great evening. Thank you.
Thank you, Angela. Operating Engineers, Local Union Number 3. California School Employees Association, Number 326 and 648. Association of Management and Confidential Employees. Dr. Greco?
Thank you, Board, for giving us an opportunity to speak. So a big shout-out to everyone out there about ready to go back to school. We're looking forward to having everyone back. Just the energy around the building with all the little kids signing up for preschool and running around today is just it reminds you why we do what we do. And mic drop. And I'm out.
Help me, Russell.
I think I got it. We'll find out. All right. But joking aside, coming out right now, I think one of the things that being back in this room, just kind of sitting in the back for a moment and watching, even with chairs faced and everything else, to me, a school board meeting kind of embodies what America is. And so this year, as you sit here as school board members, you're going to have the challenge that brings about the beauty of America. And I'm hoping that in our small community, we can start to work together again in order to bring things better for all of our students and families. This year, you will have diverse opinions. You'll be yelled at from different sides. You'll have opinions expressed. And that's all good, because what that tells you is people are passionate about what we're doing and passionate about what we're doing for the kids. And so you guys have the hard job of trying to find that common middle ground, that place between the groups, that place that can bring what's best for the kids and allow us to safely move forward. And so we just wanted, as AMAs, to take a moment to thank you all, because it is going to be a difficult year. People have strong opinions, but that's what makes America America, is the ability to have those conversations for both sides to actually listen to one another and to make concessions in order to move forward as a nation. So I know that may seem a little cheesy, but just being back in this room, seeing that history on the wall, seeing all the stuff around us is just that reminder. So thank you, and we look forward to having a wonderful year.
Thank you. Next, we have the supervisory unit. Public comments. We do have public comments. Persons wishing to address the board are requested to fill out a public comments card before the start of the meeting and give it to the secretary, board president, or the superintendent. Regular board meetings, the public may address topics not on the agenda during this section of the agenda or ask that they be heard during a specific agenda item. Comments are limited to a maximum of 3 minutes per speaker, 20 minutes total time for public input on each item for bylaw 9323. The Ralph M. Brown Act prevents the Board of Trustees from responding to these comments with the exception of clarifying questions. The California Government Code Section 54.2A states, no action or discussion shall be undertaken on any item not appearing on the posted agenda, except that members of a legislative body or its staff may briefly respond to statements made or questions posed by persons exercising their public testimony right under Section 54.9.54.3. So I would, we do have a timer that you can see here, and I would request, in the past, people have been very respectful of that time, and I really hope that we can continue to do that. So at the end of your 3 minutes, I will ask you to stop. And at that time, if you decide to carry on, we're going to turn the recording off. So hopefully we can be respectful of that 3 minutes. Our first public comment is Jerry Garrick. Jerry?
Thank you. Good evening. My name is Jerry Garrick.
We'll let you go a couple seconds over now that we're adjusting.
Thank you. Yes, thank you, sir. Good evening. My name is Jerry Garrick, and I am a parent of a student that's going to be attending Foothill Intermediate as a seventh grader. I am very excited and appreciate the efforts that you guys have put forth in order to get our children back to school 5 days a week. However, there is an issue getting them there for some of our Foothill students, and that's what I would like to address with you tonight. My daughter has been a bus rider all of her years going to Cordova Elementary, and if available, she would have done the same for Foothill Intermediate. Because of the current shortages, she is not going to have a ride to make it to school tomorrow. So the opportunity is there for tour attend, just not the ability to get there. And I understand that they're based on the information that was sent out to the parents and the public, the requirements for setting it up the way that it is, the legal mandates and the distance traveled, and then the safety of the walking routes. I would like you to take into consideration that these issues, and although that bus routes have been offered higher up as far as Brownsville and Challenge, it does not help our Loma Rica families, and it doesn't help our Hallwood families, where the distance to Foothill is still 15 miles, about a 20-minute drive. These students are not able to safely travel there on their own, obviously. I am lucky in that I was able to hire someone to take my child to and from school every day, Monday through Friday, but there are a lot of parents that don't have that same opportunity. I had a lovely conversation with the transportation director this morning, and I really value and appreciate the efforts that he's putting in, but I believe that there's more that you could possibly do to ensure that our kids are able to, all our students are able to get to school. I would like to suggest that you partner with Ubicenter Transit. I happen to know the director over there, and he's very eager and interested in joining with you in providing transportation for our students. To all schools. I would also like you to consider possible hiring incentives, pay incentives increases for bus drivers because they are at such a premium right now. So thank you. I appreciate your time, and I would just like you to take those things into consideration. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next we have Joanna Lasaga. Joanna?
Good evening, and thank you for allowing me to speak. My name is Joanna Lasaga, and I have two children. One is going to be a sophomore, and one is going to be a senior. So a couple of weeks ago, I was handed a document by a friend. The title of the document is Marysville Joint Unified School District, Serving Every Student, Every Day, in Every Way. It then lists the vision, mission, equity definition, and equity imperative. The definition of equity is, quote, the quality of being fair and impartial. This document presents the critical race theory, which concludes that every minority needs to be given more advantages to compensate for their heredity. The theory discredits the long-term system of giving values to a person through character and hard work. This is an extremely leftist stance that should not be pushed down the students' throats by your staff with an agenda. The idea of equal success, which demeans the value of work, teaches students that a free handout is always around the corner when they feel victimized rather than pushing through struggles of all kinds that affect everyone. This is Marxist ideology and propaganda, and is absolutely contrary to the United States Constitution, where it says, all men are created equal. When you were all sworn into office, you swore that you would uphold the Constitution, and this is clearly a violation of that. You should be uniting these students and not dividing them by their skin color. Let me explain. I did the research, and it seems that the majority of this document is just cut and pasted from the California Department of Education's website. If the board truly has no knowledge of this document, then where did it come from? Let me spell it out. MJUSD has an employee that has her own agenda and is willing to throw the board, all of the board, under the bus. They're pushing their own agenda against the board's oversight and cramming this down the throats of the stakeholders. It says within the document multiple times, MJUSD board believes, the board shall make decisions, the board and superintendent or designee shall develop, and the board shall regularly monitor. This document appears to be written on behalf of the board, and if it is not, which is what I am being told, because I've had several conversations with you guys, then you have a giant problem within your clerical staff that desperately needs to be addressed. So with all of this CRT being shoved down everyone's throat, I have to ask, what are you, the board, going to do about it? So for those that I haven't spoken to, I was given this document. It appears kind of like this, and I can email it to you all, that I then proceeded to put it on Facebook so that everybody could become aware of what is being, you know, put out there. So I can email it to you all, and I think it needs to be an item on the agenda next go-round. But you need to know, you got somebody working. If you truly don't know what this document is, you've got somebody working against you guys.
Thank you, Mrs. Lasaga. Your time is
up. And you need to take care.
Thank you. Next, we have Eric Malo. Eric?
My name is Eric Mallow, and thank you for the time to speak. I represent Freedom Coalition. I've got a lot of concerned parents about this vaccine that's kind of being propagandized around. And even though it's not mandated yet, is it going to be? There's not enough data. There's no FDA approval on it. And parents are scared, quite frankly. 45,000 deaths, okay? They have a lawsuit. The Freedom Coalition doctors, the five doctors, have a lawsuit. There's over 45,000 recorded deaths from this vaccine that they're calling a vaccine. And now we're talking about it. Now the businesses are already starting to do it. My sister is a surgical nurse, and I'm not going to reveal the hospital she's at, but they're trying to mandate it, which violates not only federal law, but the constitutional rights for the choice, the freedom of choice. The Nuremberg Act, if you're not aware of what that is, that's the trials in 1947 that we had against the German Nazis that did the same exact thing. So parents are concerned, and I, quite frankly, I'm concerned because this is nothing. You guys are not health professionals. It's not your job to be a doctor. It's your job to teach education. That should be left up to the parents. And that's really all I have to say about it, but I'm going to be digging in, and just like she's looking at this critical risk theory, and I'm going to go off the deep end here, but we're going to be monitoring a lot of what you guys are producing. And make no mistake about it, if you mandate vaccines in this school district, there will be lawsuits. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next, we have the superintendent's report. Mr. Cena.
Thank you. Together, serving every student every day in every way. Tomorrow, August 11th, the first day of school, will mark the first time in 516 days since all MGUSD students will have had access to full-time in-person instruction since Friday, March 13th, 2020. Throughout the choppy seas of the 17-month COVID-19 journey, public health guidance has served as MJUSD's compass, providing direction toward how to best deliver as much direct instruction as possible for all students in the healthiest and safest learning environment. For the start of the 21-22 school year, the guidance is founded on one central idea, that all students must have access to safe and full in-person instruction and to as much instructional time as possible. Toward this goal, the guidance provides a layered prevention approach emphasizing four areas in order for all students to gain access. The first is vaccinations. All eligible students and all staff are strongly encouraged. They're not required, but they are encouraged to get vaccinated. The MJUSD Program Services Department has partnered with OptumServe and Yuba County Public Health and Human Services to host 13 vaccination clinics at MJUSD school sites this past May through July, and is scheduled to provide 8 additional clinics at 4 different school sites over the next 5 weeks. Second layer, universal masking. All adults and students are to wear masks when school is in session and or students and staff share indoor spaces. The third layer, more targeted quarantine practices. Guidance provides various options to minimize the amount of time students are out of school. In the event a student is identified as a direct contact, depending on whether students are vaccinated or not, wearing a mask or not, symptomatic or not, and willing to be tested twice a week or not, under the right circumstances, students' quarantine period can be modified, substantially reducing the amount of time a student misses school. And the fourth layer is testing. To all students and staff, whether symptomatic or asymptomatic, all those who wish to be tested, MJUSD is offering COVID-19 tests every week. By focusing attention and energy on these four mitigating layers, MJUSD intends to provide safe and full in-person instruction for as much instructional time possible for all students. In addition to the public health guidance, in preparation for the first day of school, the state, through Assembly Bill 130, has created an opportunity for students and families to engage in distance learning via independent study. In order to do this, school districts throughout California are now required to redefine and reorganize their independent study program. Tonight, Executive Director of Student Engagement, Dr. Rocco Greco, is bringing forward the board's approval, Board Policy 6158, revised based on new state requirements to provide the alternative instructional program option for students and families. Thank you to the Educational Services Department and Abraham Lincoln Independent Study Program for all their hard work, organization, and planning toward providing this instructional program option for students. Also, in preparation for the first day of school and students' long-term benefit, the state is pouring resources into and setting up more new programs designed to recover learning loss and improve student growth and learning. Assistant Superintendent of Business Services Penny Lossing will share a presentation tonight updating us all and asking for board approval on the many revisions to the budget over the past 45 days since the board approved the district's budget on June 22nd. Thank you, everyone, for all your efforts all along this journey building toward tomorrow's first day. I want to wish everyone a very successful and happy first day of school as we all work together to serve every student, every day, in every way.
Thank you, Mr. Cena. You know, just sitting here thinking, two of the greatest things about getting to be back here in person is getting to see all you folks sitting there. And the second greatest thing is not having to look at my own picture on the dang monitor. So I'm sure glad we're all back in the room together. Approval of minutes. Minutes from the regular board meeting of 7/20/21. Is there any discussion regarding the minutes? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Trustee Doug Criddle. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Randy Davis. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Was there aye, Mrs. Hasty? The 20th. No, the very first one. Okay, so motion carries, 5 yes. Next, we have the minutes of the special board meeting on 7/29/21. Is there any discussion regarding the minutes? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Trustee Davis. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Doug Criddle. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any nays? Any abstentions? Is that a yes? One abstention from Trustee Hasty. Okay, next we have the consent agenda. Are there any items on the consent agenda that the board would like to have pulled? Not hearing any, we'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve. Motion to approve by Trustee Davis. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Hasty. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries, 5 yes. New business, purchasing department, resolution 20-21-22/03, disposal of obsolete textbooks and instructional materials for the 2021-22 school year. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the resolution to authorize the disposal of obsolete elementary and secondary textbooks along with the instructional materials for the 2021-22 school year. Mr. Horn?
Well, good evening. It's great to be back. I don't think I've met all three of the new board members since last year, so it's great to see your faces. So these first three resolutions that we'll be bringing are procedural ones that we do on an annual basis, and it gives the ability to function within the district. And the first one is for textbooks. So if you have any questions, it's just for the actual disposal. Once the textbooks have been deemed no longer in use, we look for donations. We also actually dispose of them if no takers will have these.
Thank you, Ms. Torn. Any discussion or questions from board members? I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Trustee Davis. Is there a second? Second by Trustee Doug Criddle. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries, 5 yes. Item number 2, resolution 2021-22/04. Disposal of a surplus in Warren District property for the 21-22 school year. Purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the resolution to dispose of surplus in Warren District property by public/private sale, donation, recycle, or discard for the 21-22 school year. Mr. Horn?
So this one is for disposal. The first process we do, if there's any life left to the equipment, we'll place them up for sale to public auction, and we'll follow that process. But as far as procedure, we keep materials here at the district until they actually have no value left. We run them through. So then they'll be taken and they'll be disposed. Any item that has any sort of function and use, we store them in the warehouse and we redisperse to the rest of the schools when needed. But when they're broken, nobody needs those things because they pose hazards. And
Thank you very much. Comments or questions? I'll entertain a motion. Motion to approve by Trustee Doug Criddle. Is there a second? Second by Trustee Randy Davis. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. 5 yes. Item number 3, Resolution 2021-22/05, State Contracts. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the Board approve the resolution to acquire materials, equipment, supplies, services, and vehicles through the use of various state of California Department of General Services and Department of Technology contracts. Mr. Horn?
So every year we have to go back to the board and ask for approval to use the state procured contracts. Now these contracts are procured through the state of California, and we have the ability to use them as well. And these contracts are very good, where you'll see us will actually we'll negotiate with vendors. The state of California and their purchasing power, they actually negotiate with manufacturers. So they're able to yield the best prices, and so by passing this resolution, it gives us for the year the ability to use those contracts.
Comments, questions? Entertain a motion. Motion to approve by Trustee Gary Criddle. Is there a second? Second by Trustee Davis. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. 5 yes. Thank you, Mr. Horn.
Thank you.
Personnel Services, item number 1, tentative agreement with OE3. Purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the tentative agreement, TA, between the Marysville Joint Unified School District, and the Operating Engineers Local Union Number 3, OE3. Mr. Carrion?
Thank you, and good evening, everyone. We have the opportunity to bring before you a now ratified tentative agreement, ratified by the Operating Engineers Local Union Number 3 membership. Ultimately, the tentative agreement, as stated, provides for a 3.5% one-time off-schedule payment for employees represented by OE3. And that takes effect July 1, 2020, retroactive, of course, for the past school year, including a 2% on-schedule ongoing raise to all OE3 represented employees, and then also from an economic standpoint, an increase to safety shoe allowance and tool allowance for those eligible employees. There is a Me Too clause associated with this tentative agreement, and we'll certainly recommend that the board approve this tentative agreement as proposed and ultimately as ratified by the membership. There are AB 1200 disclosure statements that certainly represent and have been approved by the County Office of Education that helps influence, of course, the proposal for approval.
Thank you very much, Mr. Carrion. Board members, comments or questions? We'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Trustee Doug Criddle. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Hasty. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. 5 yes. Item number 2, salary/wage increase for the unrepresented employees. Purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the salary/wage increase for unrepresented employees rendering service as regular contracted employees. Mr. Carrion?
Yes. In similar manner as the previous item, we have a few classifications within our classified employee ranks that are unrepresented and ultimately merit consideration for approval for similar compensatory activities, including the 3.5 one-time off-schedule payment retroactive to July 1, 2020, and an ongoing increase to their wage scales of a 2% increase that now takes effect when approved July 1st, 2021. There is a Me Too clause in the event that a compensatory offer is given to another group. And also AB 1200 disclosure statements will be provided, and we ask the board to ratify just as these employees would ratify if they were represented. So to that end, we recommend that this be approved, and payment will be reflected, if approved, at the end of the August pay warrant pay period.
Thank you. Board members, comments or questions? We'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Trustee Davis. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Hasty. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Five yes. Thank you, Mr. Carrion. Next, we have Educational Services. Early Literacy Support Block Grant Budget for Cedar Lane Elementary School, grades TK-3. The purpose of the agenda item is request the board approve the budget for the Early Literacy Support Block Grant for Cedar Lane Elementary Schools, TK-3.
Good evening.
Hi, Amy.
Hi. On June 22nd, the board approved our LCAP, the literacy plan and budget, and I said I would bring back to the board if the state of California required a change, because we had asked for it to be approved before the state actually approved everything. The state came back and asked for a minor change on the budget on the indirect cost. We had estimated the indirect cost for year 2 and 3, but of course the state of California actually does provide the indirect cost out that far. And so they just asked us to make a correction to make sure our indirect cost is in alignment with what they're going to be in year 2 and 3. We made the correction, submitted it again to CDE, and on July 15th, they sent us their approval. And so we're now completely approved and ready to go for the school year.
Okay, great. Board members, do we have any questions, comments? We'll entertain a motion. Motion to approve by Trustee Davis. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Hasty. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Five yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Amy. Item number 2, Board Policy 6158, Independent Study. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board hold a public hearing regarding the revisions to Board Policy 6158, Independent Study. The public hearing is now open. Looks like Dr. Greco wants to speak.
Just bringing the explanation for you. So this year with AB 130, what they did for independent studies, knowing that there would be an influx of students out into independent study schools. As you guys remember, we opened Abraham Lincoln back up, got it WASC accredited at the end of last year in order to prepare for what we saw coming. In that, what they've done is they've changed it. So for anyone who was familiar with independent studies, it used to have the requirement that you would meet one time once a week with a student. So for this year, what they've done is they made modifications. So for K-3 grade levels, you get synchronous live instruction every single day. So basically what they're doing is they're kind of saying best practice from last year in a distance learning, what would have occurred without the heartache of having to try and teach kids in front of you at the same time. But so for this, K-3 gets 5 days of live instruction. For 4th through 6th grade, they'll get live interaction every single day and at least 1 day of live instruction. And then 7th through 12th, there's the 1 day of live instruction that's similar to what it was in the past. So this policy is taken directly from CSBA updated. We didn't amend the policy. We did go through with the auditors and make sure all of our documents, master agreements, and everything were in alignment with the re-engagement strategies and the minutes required.
Thank you. Any discussion?
Doctor, what are we anticipating the number of students?
So when we initially pushed this through last year, we kind of anticipated the original number would probably be around 350 to 400. In the past, district independent studies has rolled over the last 15 years anywhere from 500 students down to about 140 students. We had, as of 2 days ago, we were at about 220 students. As of today, I believe we've hit, once they're all on the computer, roughly 300 students. I would imagine that as we continue to go and kids get back into school, you'll probably see another little bump. So I would imagine that we'll probably be sitting somewhere around 450 as initially projected.
Thank you. Yep.
Any other comments? Are there any other people from the public that would like to speak to this topic? Okay, we'll entertain a motion to close the public hearing.
Motion to close.
Motion to close the public hearing by Trustee Davis. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Hasty. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. 5 yes. Now we need a motion regarding Board Policy 6158.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Trustee Hasty. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Gary Criddle. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. 5 yes. Thank you, Dr. Greco. Next, we have buildings and grounds. Item number one, select core construction for the Covelot Elementary School modernization project based on the fee proposal submitted for the pre-construction service and lease-leaseback construction services. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the selection of core construction for Covelot Elementary School modernization project and authorize notice to proceed with pre-construction services in the amount not to exceed $25,000, as stated in the core construction proposal. Issuance of a notice to proceed with construction services is contingent on the board approval of the final guaranteed maximum price to be determined upon completion of pre-construction services and submitted to the board for approval prior to issuance of the notice to proceed with construction services. I think that might be one of our longest ones, Mr. Barnett. Mr. Barnett.
Yes, thank you, and it's great to see all you guys in person versus the screen, like Mr. Rasmussen was saying. So tonight what we're asking for is the approval of core construction, and what they're going to do is this contract is specifically for the value engineering for this project, which means that alongside of PBK WLC Architects, which we previously approved for the Covelot project, they will ensure that as we're designing this project, it stays within budget and within what we're anticipating for cost. So by bringing them on board, they'll ensure that we stay within those guidelines of what we're looking for. So we went through this process. We interviewed these contractors, Core Construction, Flint, Balfour Beatty, Auto Construction. We had a total of 9 firms submit. Out of the 9, the 4 that rose to the top were the ones I've listed. After interviewing, Core Construction was clearly the winner on this request for proposals as we interviewed them. You know, they're working on our Arboga project. They're familiar with the district. They know the history. I think for the district, they're a great representation of where we're going. I also want to inform the board that on this project, Covelod, just to show you how great Marysville is and what we're doing progressively, as this project for the state of California is the largest approved CDE project in the entire state. So right now we have gained state recognition. I've worked with the Coalition of Adequate Schools and Housing, and I've also helped other districts move along through this process. So it's a huge accolade and kudos to our team here and our leadership that we've gotten this far. And like I said, I'm really proud to work here and what we're doing for our community. So with that, I would like to introduce Core Construction. We have Matt Wade and Nick Maurer, and they're just going to kind of go through a short little presentation on what we're doing. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barnett. It's always hard to follow Travis with his, so thank you for the kind words. Members of the board, thanks, appreciate it. Good evening. My name is Matt Wade. I'm the Vice President of Core Construction for the California region. And what you're going to see tonight is some of the stuff we illustrated in our presentation to the selection committee. So Covelot Elementary School, we really started early on investigating some of the challenges that had with the school, really got to understand the local surroundings of the school, and we're going to go into that a little bit here and kind of give you an overview of some of the homework we did. So, next slide. Oh, that's me. Okay, cool. Usually Nick's over there. So, just a little bit of the agenda. We're going to talk about a little bit of our team. Some of you know us. Some of you may not. Then our project experience that we have, and then we'll get into the Covelot project itself. I'd like to compliment the district on the evaluation criteria and the categories, and this is what we were measured to within our proposal and our interview. just a little bit about CORE. These are kind of the three pillars that's the foundation of our company. Team and trust, trust with the district, trust with our trade partners, trust with all the stakeholders. Our values there, you can see integrity and fairness, results, and continuous improvement with our clients and with our people. And then lastly is the client decides. You're trusting us to do your project, and we're going to do everything in our power to ensure we're meeting your expectations based on what you decide that you want to build. A little bit of background. We're the fifth largest school builder in the nation. We have a national presence, but a real small family feel when we operate. We have done over 1,800 K-12 projects, 250-plus K-12 clients. Those are some of the projects that we have kind of nationally. And like Travis said, we're on Arboga right now and, just getting ready for school, right? And as I can report, we're all dialed in, we're good, and everything's ready for that first phase, so. One of the important things about our company is our rich history, and we dove into the rich history of Covelod Elementary, starting with, Mary Covelod, where she was, a survivor of the Donner Party and of 1847. And you could read the little story that's on the Covelod website. We all kind of read that and kind of sunk in. But, it's more about... That's the first school that landed here in the area, and it's pretty cool that we get to have the opportunity to come and rejuvenate what was built there, long time ago. And, the school feeds so many challenged and underprivileged children in that area. And, we've walked that campus multiple times and just thought about how many community outreach events we can have to promote, what's going on there. So we take this to heart. This is one thing that we really thought dovetailed well with our rich history of our company. And, we really look forward on hitting the ground running with that community downtown. A little bit about the project. This is a logistics plan and a phasing plan we put together. Kind of just shows our first thinking of how we would navigate through the project, how we made sure that the first phase was the 16 classroom two-story building that's there in the bottom left, and looked at how we're going to delineate fencing, and make sure that we're keeping the public safe, the students and the faculty safe. We put up monitors on the corner of 6th and G to track traffic, to see how much traffic is going down there, so we can evaluate whether G Street or maybe 6th Street would be a better spot for some of our logistics and laydown area. So this just gives you kind of an idea of all the homework we go into and all the stats and data we collect to make sure, before we start the project, to make sure we have all those preemptive plans in place. It's a good neighbor policy, residential area down there, so our superintendent, make sure all the residents are aware of what's going on, and we're keeping all the neighbors happy so they always have his contact information on hand. Another thing we do is a thing called a disturbance report. So far in advance, we'll know that we may have a shutdown or a major delivery or a crane pick. So we distribute disturbance reports far in advance of that actual event, just to make sure we're over-communicating of what's going on and getting any feedback so we can make any adjustments to our plan before the event happens. Experience modification rate. This is how we track, or how the state tracks us, OSHA tracks us from our safety statistics. We're at a 0.62. It's really, we have one of the lowest EMRs in the industry. Industry average is about one. And it just tells you, you know, we focus on our safety. We make sure everybody's going home every day safely. And everybody around us with the public and students and staff are also going home safely. This was a little virtualization of the project. In no means this is a architectural actual image of the project. We still have a lot of work to do with PBK. It was just some building blocks that we could use to illustrate what the project looked like, kind of where the buildings would sit, and some of the phasing of the project. And it was just a communication tool. So we use this a lot. During our pre-construction service phase with the design team. So our clients, the district, board members, you can see kind of how this is shaping, you know, and actually visually see it as opposed to just see a 2D drawing. A little bit of the other homework we did when we walked the site, there were some lines that cut right through the property, and you could see just a bird mess all the way through the campus, you know. First we thought, you know, from a safety concern, overhead lines is probably not a good idea on a school campus, and then the mess that it makes. So we did a little homework. We found out it's not power lines, which is good with challenges with PG&E and trying to get those rerouted. It is data and fiber lines that we're going to try to build that into the design, incorporate that design, so we relocate those either around the site or underground. So just a little bit of research we did there. Outreach is so important. You know, our projects are built based on our trade contractors as well. We take a very, very granular, you know, detailed approach with our outreach, with a 12-step process. We advertise. We have town hall events. When we were all Zooming, we'd had Zoom events. 150 people would call in on Zoom. Given all the trade partners, information about the project to get them excited, to get them motivated, so they want to bid to us. Some quick stats on Arboga. We had over 450 trade contractors that we solicited to, and we received 160 bids. And we had at least 3 to 5 bids per bid package, which is really, really outstanding, especially in a competitive market right now. And so we feel like, you know, we're gonna have those same kind of results here. And at the end of the day, what does that mean? It really means that we're getting the most competitive, you know, pricing and the most qualified and skilled and trained workforce, you know, for the district for these projects. This is another communication tool, a newsletter that we do on our projects just to keep the people informed, keep the faculty informed, other people around the district informed of what's going on. It's kind of, we like to showcase this, and the project team takes a lot of pride in doing these reports to keep everybody motivated of what kind of milestones they've achieved each month. So just another communication tool. And again, we really enjoy our partnership with PBK, WLC, the district. Arboga, again, is going well. We appreciate the opportunity again for Covalod. You know, this next year of pre-construction is going to be so important to dial in the project within the budget that we have and understand the schedule and the phasing and really dial in the plan so there are no hiccups, you know, during construction. And we're really excited. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. So as you can see, as we went through, there's a lot of detail in this, but I just want to point out the reason why our partner with CORE came ahead, because with all this research and development they did, they're not hired for us. So they set up traffic studies, they dove into the history. It was very impressive. So what we're doing today, I'm just going to just reiterate, we're not asking for you to approve a full amount or a lease-leaseback contract with CORE Construction today. We are asking you to approve the agreement for the $25,000 for them to do the value engineering on the project. And just to make sure the board is clear, this is the next step
For next steps to come after this will be for them to develop the plan and the blueprints with the architect, and that is how we're going to get to the lease back will be the next thing that we ask you to approve moving forward with funding and a guaranteed maximum price. And as you guys were aware, the last board meeting, we approved the feasibility study for Foothill as well, and we're going to be tracking that very similarly as we move forward. So if you have any questions towards us, I'm more than happy to either go back and reiterate anything for clarification or any other questions you guys might have.
Well, one of the questions is cost control. And given what we know about materials and the either the shortfall or the whatever the supply and demand, how are we going to handle that?
That's a great question, Mr. Davis. So with our partners, working with PVK, WLC, Core Construction, there's been conversations had already. As we know, escalation costs are skyrocketing. We've discussed best value and how to procure materials at this point. In the past, we could wait, right? And we've seen it with our BOGA. We kind of waited, and we ended up with a $2 million escalation costs to that project. Didn't get any more project. That was just the escalation cost. We're having discussions with our partners right now in procurement methods, meaning that if we're going to go steel frame, stick frame, if we do contractor furnished, contractor installed, and it's part of what they come to an agreement, our partners can purchase materials now and store it, right, because they're the contractor. As a district, if we purchase and procure, we need to bring it onto district property. So if they can come up with the numbers and they do their research, that is a method that a lot of school districts are using right now in the state of California. They're doing contractor furnished, contractor installed, and they are purchasing materials now. And it's like stock market, I hate saying it, but it's like they lock in the prices, and then when we go to build, then they start shipping the materials out. So it's something that we are keeping a close eye on. That is something with our partners, I've asked them to provide a study and show us so we can have an educated direction on how we need to procure our material or moving forward. Because like you said, the escalation costs, by the time we say a guaranteed maximum price, we've already seen it. So we're looking at creative ways to get our procurement and our materials now.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Travis, I would just like to say thank you for bringing in the construction company early on in the process. It seems like it makes a whole lot of sense that they can work with the architecture firm and hand in hand. So thank you.
Absolutely. You're welcome.
Any other comments or questions? We'll entertain a motion. Motion to approve by Trustee Doug Criddle. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Randy Davis. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. 5 yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barnett. Thank you, Matt. Well, I do want to say, too, Matt, I was just a week and a half ago, I kind of had my wonders about our BOGA, but been following it pretty much on a daily basis, and it looks great. We're going to have places to park and drop kids off and everything. So thank you. Next, we have business services number one. Quotes for the MHS library revitalization. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve 3 quotes to revitalize the MHS library. Meter education in the estimate amount of $148,000, or is that $148 million? Right, we got it. Oh, okay. I guess I can't see with my blurred glasses. Number 2, EKC Enterprises in the estimated amount of $6,861.23. And number 3, CDW-G in the estimated amount of $21,815.23. For a grand total estimated price of $156,791.59. I think putting all those cents in there was getting me, Mrs. Lossing. Mrs. Lossing, are you speaking to this, or? Oh, Mrs. Matthews? Hi, Siobhan.
Hello, good evening, everyone. Yes, thank you for letting me present today. The MHS library has the potential of being a fantastic interactive space. And it's large. It's as large or maybe even a little larger than this room, which used to house most of the books that were over there. So our library hasn't seen many upgrades in at least 30 years, and that's a conservative estimate. So 2 years ago, or over the summer of 2020, we started cleaning. We got some carpet. We had some paint and culling out the books that probably hadn't been checked out since the 70s. So we did a lot of hard work and really looking at what we had in inventory. Students weren't using the library. They weren't checking out text or looking at the resources. As you know, we have a lot of online good resources for kids to use for research. And we have a certificated librarian in there. So thanks to maintenance to help us start the process, thanks to our literacy techs to help us clean it out, and then Kelly helped and Penny get some bids. In the meantime, we've received some generous donations over the last 2 years from private donors, which we had they said to put it into library or music, so we put it in special accounts with budget strings. And we really feel like those donations could be used in this space. So what we're asking is for some support for our library to make it an interactive learning environment. It has, did you have the slides, Russell, that you could show? I just brought four diagrams from Meteor that we'll hopefully display. Yes, this one and then the next one. I just brought a couple of photos just as we were clearing stacks, the carpet from the early 90s, beginning paint, and then categorizing and looking at books and moving through the process of cleaning and painting. Okay, now I need the other show, Russell. Thank you. We had invited Meteor, but they were unable to attend today, so hopefully I'll do this project justice. So Kelly brought over folks to bid. So this is the space that we're looking at. It has the ability to move the furniture into collaborative groups if we needed to. If we were continued to be on extended learning or needing space, the furniture can be moved. In the top right corner is our college and career center that we have recently added that position. That's where this person is housed, where the kids can do research and write scholarship applications. And it's definitely an interactive space. And you can see in the center that kind of an S-curve is for collaborative discussions. And basically, all the furniture is movable to do whatever it is you need to do. So this is what it looks like in a 3D overview model, with the circulation desk on the east end with kind of an art display of what we're about, and it could be literacy, it's a Wordle, and just interactive space and technology, places to plug in. We're pretty much one-to-one. And then all around, there's shelving. It doesn't show it here. We just purchased new updated text based on the interests of students, fiction and nonfiction. And so those are being scanned in and put on the shelves as we speak. So this is another view. And then I have one more photo of the foyer just to make it look like, hey, come on in. So with the donations, would take that $176,000 down to $146,791.59. So.
Those cents, huh, Sean?
Yes. Yeah, the cents, yeah. So thank you. Do you have questions?
Do we have any question? Comment?
I understood you to say that the donation was to go toward the library or to music.
Yeah, the donor was, she just said, what are your top two? And at the time I said, library or music. Since the initial donation, we've had quite a bit of support for our music program, and I feel like it's in a good place right now, and this would be the priority. Not that I don't love music, Allison, but she gave us a choice to name the top two at the time, which is 2 or 3 years ago, and so those were the top two, and she said either or. So, thank you.
I wanted to tell you, I might not have, I have a book maybe at home that needs to be returned since the 80s, but job well done. This has been something that has been needed for a very long time, Siobhan, so this is a very nice program.
Yeah, and I'd like to thank Kelly and Penny for their support and research. The other piece that we're finding in our college and career readiness efforts is parents need a place to come and get help working through the FAFSA. A component which didn't show in here is interactive screens on the wall, media and sound, so that we can hold larger meetings like ELAC and parents and college and career readiness type activities, which is the direction that we have been charged to go. So thank you.
When do you think, if this is approved, it would start the project?
Did you hear October? If we purchased, if it's approved and we purchase delivery, we would start to take delivery in October on the furnishings that they had quoted for us.
The other thing I noticed when I looked at the bids was the huge discounts that I think it was Mercury or
Meteor.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of those items, they discounted 50% or better.
Yeah,
so
Kelly.
It was just amazing to look through what the vendor was willing to put forward.
Yeah, do you want to talk to the... Can you clarify the discounts at Meteor?
Okay, so... The pricing that we got from them is actually based off of the Omnia contract, one of the state contracts that we piggyback. And because this is such a large project, we were able to get to the top tier of their discount structure, and they were able to give us massive discounts.
Congratulations.
So, Siobhan, I think build it and they will come.
That's what we're hoping.
Any other comments or questions? We'll entertain a motion. Motion to approve by Trustee Doug Criddle. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Gary Criddle. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 5 yes. Thank you very much. Next we have item number 2, the 2021-22 45-day budget revision based on the state enacted budget. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the 2021-22 45-day budget revision. Ms. Lossing?
Thank you, President Rasmussen. Hello, board members, Superintendent Cena. So nice to be here. Lots and lots and lots of changes. We have the 45-day budget revise for you, and what is that? We did this last year, and it's required per Ed Code. Anytime the board adopts its budget for the year based on the information that it knows at the time, and then the state enacts, it's called enacting its budget when the governor signs it, and it changes our adopted budget. So this is going to share with you what those changes are from when we adopted our budget in June to what happens now when the state adopts its budget for this current year. And this is the familiar, I'm hoping it gets very familiar, is the budget LCAP cycle so that we can see exactly what numbers we're talking about. So this is going to be current year budget all throughout this presentation. I have 3 slides here that outline each of the changes, and then I have some detail about it as we get a little further, and it's not real long, but the thing is, there's a lot. So first of all, the local control funding formula, where we get the majority of our funding. There's the base, and then I've talked about the base and the supplemental concentration grant piece that's based on our unduplicated pupil percentage. Well, they've increased that concentration grant amount another $2.8 million. And then I put the timelines for expenditure, and there's some more specifics about that that we'll get into. That amount can be carried over, but it'll be captured for the purpose, the specific purpose that we'll talk about in a little bit. And then another change, when the governor enacted the budget, the expanded learning opportunities that you may recall from before, I'd like to have my numbers correct instead of just trying to remember. The original enacted or expanded learning opportunity, 90%, the $6.4 million, and then there was a 10% piece that ended up actually being $700,000 for paraeducators. The other piece was what we just used for summer school. And then there's, there'll be additional actions for that. This is adding to that and will be used for our ACEs, expanding our ACEs program. And this will allow us till September of 2024 to expend this particular $2.9 million at this time. There's another new pot of money, A through G Completion Improvement Grant, $737,000, and that'll be for our high schools. I have some more information about that, but there's a nice amount of time to expend that to help our students that didn't do so well last year and that might struggle to get a C or better in A through G. The last bit is the pre-K Planning and Implementation Grant, $135,000. That one's going to require a public hearing by June 2022. Pre-K, also known as TK, or our transitional kindergarten, and there's going to be a lot more about that coming up. As part of the enacted state budget, the cash deferrals that I've been talking about were completely eliminated for this year, and then those that were enacted last year, that some of them weren't going to be repaid until up to November of this year. So basically, like getting your paycheck and them saying that, yes, we owe you, but we're not going to pay you yet. So that's what the cash deferrals are. It didn't change how much we were owed, but getting the cash. So all of that's been repaid now. So we're up to speed on our cash, and that's a good thing. Another positive was the unemployment insurance. Now, this is it's interesting because it was going to increase a huge amount of money for it's every dollar of wage that it's applied to. And in 2021, the rate was 0.05%, and it had been that rate for several years. Well, the original information we had when we adopted our budget was that it was going to increase to 1.23%. And now that is down to 0.5%. So there's a savings. It's a decrease of the increase, so we'll take it. Another thing, to be fully transparent, I've been talking about a lot of additional money. Well, when we built our budget, and they did build it from a zero-based budget instead of just rolling everything over so that you get the most accurate budget you can. With our custodial expenses, there were two main account codes that have all of our materials and supplies, and they were a bit confusing because one of them is a multi-site code and the other one is the DO code. And one of them was input, but not both. And now it's turned out that we needed both of them. So this will be a $400,000 increase in the custodial expenses to make the budget accurate. And that'll be formalized in the first interim in December when Ms. Pisalia will bring that to you. So, and then this slide specifically for special education, the base rate has increased from $650 per ADA to $715 per ADA. And that's really good because, as we know, we have a fantastic special education program, but it's been seriously underfunded by both the state and the federal government for, you know, forever, and we're not alone. Every district has that same situation. I did a very rough estimate. This is not the SELPA's estimate of an additional $600,000, but it should be roughly that amount. And then also, full disclosure, since the information we had when we adopted the budget, the SELPA numbers tend to lag, and so now what we know about our excess cost estimate for this year is going to increase $1 million. So that's not a wash, but it's anyway. So this brings us to that was the overview, and here's a little bit more detail. So I talked about the LCFF and the concentration grant increase of $2.8 million. So that's taking it the calculation factor from 50% to 65% for the grade span base grant. That's how we get that number. And so here is very important how they're going to allow the use of that additional money is specifically to increase the number of credentialed and classified staff who provide direct services to pupils. So it's that staff to pupil ratio, and they're going to monitor that probably through the audit process, which we're familiar with, for compliance. And then it will also require Dr. Greco to, with other stuff, it will be part of the LCAP update that they're going to provide another new template for here in the fall, and then it'll be due for your approval by February of next year. A little more on that expanded learning opportunities. Probably should be Dr. Greco talking about it, but just to overview, we must offer for that $2.9 million, we must offer expanded learning opportunities to all of our classroom-based unduplicated students, K through 6, and we must provide those opportunities to at least half of the students. So there's really some strong compliance issues. And this is a little bit more about that. The summer intercession, the expanded instructional day, TK and kinder with pupil to staff ratio of no more than 10 to 1, grades 1 through 6, pupil to staff ratio of no more than 20 to 1. It talks a little bit about ACEs, homework assistance, tutoring, enrichment for those students that aren't necessarily struggling but that could use the enrichment, and then a nutrition component for the nutritious snack or meal or both, which I believe is typically already there. But what I noted at the top there was that when you start expanding these ratios of staff to student, we have to have somewhere to put them. So us and all the other districts in California are going to need a lot more qualified staff and more classrooms in order to make this happen. So moving right along to the A to G completion improvement grant, I think I mentioned that this will be for our high schools. They do have, I believe it was the... they have some time for this one. It's either 2025 or 26, but it's for allowing pupils that received a D, F, or fail in an A through G approved course last year to retake those. And they can also use that for credit recovery opportunities. And then also recommending that funds be used toward pupils in danger of not receiving a grade C or better in our A through G courses this year. So that, and then for this one, there's another plan that has to be developed and approved in order to receive the funds. And this plan is due on or before January of next year. So lots of work to do. So the pre-K planning and implementation grant, $135,000. That's for the district to prepare a plan for how all of our TK students will have access to full-day learning programs. It's going to be metered in over the next 3 years to the point that all four-year-olds will be offered. I've even heard today talk of three-year-olds, but for now it's the four-year-olds, and this one requires the plan have a for the board to conduct a public hearing on or before June 2022, and then we commit to CDE that will provide program data and an overall program evaluation for that. And then here's what's happening, and here's the years that I was talking about. The enacted state budget is establishing a path toward universal TK, phasing it in from next year through 25-26, and at that time, the district will be required to admit the eligible students to a TK program. Some of the criteria: maintain no more than 24 student class enrollment, and then it will ratchet up as far as, or down, I guess, for the staff-to-student ratio in the coming years. And there are some teacher credentialing requirements involved. I know there's special credentials for the TK, I believe. There's information on that. And then that was pretty much what I had to share with you. It's a lot of information. It's brand new money tied to very specific actions. Lots of plans that have to be developed, and a lot of work, but a lot of wonderful opportunities to help mitigate the learning loss for our students, and to just move forward with some very positive learning opportunities. This is the next step slide. In September, Jennifer Pasalia will be presenting the last year's numbers, the unaudited actuals, which is the fiscal department's closing the books right now. And in September, you'll see how last year played out. All through the year, we adjust the budget, and then they close the books, and you'll see what actually the numbers are. And then after that, you'll the next look at this year's budget after today, this informal update for the 45-day revise, will be the official first interim budget report in December. So that's the routine. And that's what I have. Are there any questions? I know it's a lot of information. We can probably put this on our website. Yeah,
comments or questions?
Was the increase in the custodial, it had anything to do with COVID PPE, or is that separate from that particular line item?
Actually, no. It was just a matter of the basics of the building the budget. It was thousands of line items, and that particular one was missed, and it happened to be a lot of money. That's why the materiality of it is why I shared it.
I wanted to also just compliment you. Your presentation's great. It's informal. Great job.
Thank you.
Thanks,
yes. Mr.
Criddle. Thank you, Mrs. Lossing. I had a quick question. Actually, it's more of a peripheral question on the A through G Completion Improvement Grant, Learning Loss Mitigation Grants. Must be allowed to take this money to pay for programs if they get a course of a D or a fail. How does that affect a student's transcript? Maybe Mr. Greco can address that. I'm just kind of curious how that works, if
sure
the money's tied to that or not.
Yeah, I believe there's information on our website right now about that, I think.
Yeah, there's a few different components that come in. So this piece of the grant, these funds, I don't think we've done a lot to research what we're going to do with this yet when it comes to the plan. So there's a few kind of stages that come into this. So with AB 104, part of the thing is any student who was in high school, and everyone should have received correspondence. It's up on the webpage as well. If you were a student in high school last year, so any of the grade levels, you can apply to basically say, hey, I want that grade changed. And so initially you would look and think that's only a D or an F grade, but it's any grade that was lower than average. So you might have a student who's always an A student, they're holding a 4.0. The only requirement is that by changing the grade to a pass, no pass, that it doesn't negatively affect the student's GPA. So if you're a 4.0 student and you got a B, that was your struggle at that level, you can actually apply to have that B taken down. So at this point, kind of the caveat or the piece that we continue to work with, the state has been behind their deadlines on releasing to us. So all of the state schools have agreed without penalty, they'll take the pass, no pass. A good number of the privates have signed on as well. The University of California has been slow to respond. So the only one, at last time I checked about 3 days ago, that had said, yes, we'll accept this is UC Davis. They were still waiting for a response. So as the kids are working, what we did is two things. We sent it out for families to be able to send in and say we want these grades changed. Knowing that everyone's busy and these are crazy times, we also proactively, all of the counselors ran lists to look to see, are there kids that this could affect positively? And so then they went back through. And so then part of the calibration of all of this is there's also in that legislation that you can graduate with state minimum requirements right now. So state minimum being 130, our district being 220. The way we worded ours for our policy was that you have to complete 8 academic semesters. So we're not going to allow you to graduate early with this. This is a way to make sure that you're getting everything you can. So where that becomes something that was good for the counselors or an alignment was if you had a schedule set for this year and maybe you were a senior and you had planned to take 3 or 4 electives at this point, they look at your schedule and they went back kind of through to see who this would affect and said, wait a minute, if we take this student out of 2 electives, we talk to them, and we get them in these 2 other classes, now they're able to complete the A through G. So now, because they don't need all of these other credits, we take some of the electives off. The state accepts that as they go in. Then they're able to go with the A through G completion. So there's kind of a balance in those pieces. So what I would see these funds starting to go towards, and this is really the difficulty, I think, in the plan, or the part that you're going to see as a school board. This money was handed out, all of these funds that we're talking about, in the effort to get equity and to bring education to where places where it struggled the most. And I think what you see right now is it's actually creating a greater inequity for us, because if you look at the teachers that we've lost or the people that have left kind of around this right now, they're taking jobs closer to home because we're not the only ones who got this money. Everyone else did. And so you look at, and I know I'm going to tangent a little bit here, gas is $4.50 a gallon, all of these things factor in. So what happens is teachers who are commuting here, there's now money for them to take jobs closer to home. And so we're having struggles in hiring to fill, not just teaching, but in offering these additional programs after school because we just don't have the people available. So trying to figure out a plan as to how you use the available resources, working with teachers to be able to offer extra services, working with classified staff, extending hours to be able to offer additional services in those realms, without extending it to the point where you make somebody ineffective during the day because they're working so much every single night. And so I think that's kind of the nuance or delicacy in the planning of this right now, is how do we utilize families? How do we bring folks in? How do we create partnerships in the community with businesses and other people that we can subcontract out to be able to create hubs, to create these opportunities, as well as what all of our amazing teachers are doing in the classroom. So over the next 2 years, there's going to be a lot of delicate planning on how to actually utilize these funds and balance them so that we are going to give back as little as possible and be able to benefit our community as much as possible in the process.
Thank you.
Yep.
How many students do you think this would involve?
I would say to some degree, probably all of them. I mean, there's kids who did better in this situation, but this could benefit them as well. So you might find that you have a subsect of population that used to always only go to in-school, and they may have found that, hey, you take away the social pressures, you take away the things that I can get in trouble from, I actually like the academics or do much better. So you'll see a different population kind of starting to come over in independent studies. And so as you develop that independent studies program, what resources can you put in place that would affect those students positively there? So it'll be kind of this, when you think about this, the kids who have struggled and done poorly, and there's funds that we can use in order to remediate as we get people to do it, but also to augment. So like when we talk about the independent studies or like the early college program that we've got going, things like that that we can fund that create that initiative, that create that drive to want to be here, those programs that really drive all of the other things. And so we need to make sure that when we're looking at this, we're looking at it in a creative realm, what we're bringing in to really make those things happen. And so you may think, well, kids struggled in math, we got to pound them with math in order to get that in. When in reality, if the kid is getting music or the kid is really tied into like an ag welding class and that's what gets them there every day, and that teacher can make that relationship that math is something you're going to need to do those things, it's little things like that that'll be on the outside of what we're doing that kind of help push. But I would say that it's all students at this point have some effect in this.
Any other comments? Thank you, Dr. Greco.
You're welcome.
Questions? Yeah.
I have a question. On the ELO grades, TK through 6, $2.9 million, is that going to cover the costs of adding the staff in the classrooms? And do they really expect four-year-olds to sit through a whole day of school?
It's evolving. And there is other opportunities for funding. There's some money for facilities. I just didn't want to make it too complicated when the details of it aren't necessarily available, and it's things that you have to apply for as well. So that would be, there's Educator Effectiveness Block Grant, there's some community day school, community partnership money, the facilities, and on top of these other plans that are required. So, but there'll be more information coming for that.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Greco, did you want to add?
I'm just going to add one thing on the 2.9. So that 2.9, this is where it gets kind of confusing, because kind of like last year when I came to you and I said the LCAP, and it's one thing, and then the state's like, but also the LCAP, and it's something different. So kind of the same thing here. You have the early or the expanded learning opportunities grant, and then you have the expanded learning opportunities program. So before we hit COVID, expanded learning opportunities was STARS and ACEs in the after school. So when you look at those two funding sources, it's like a tongue twister. The expanded learning opportunities program, that's the money that's going to expand the after school programs, the $2.9 million that was coming in. The grant is the money that we kind of brought forward, the plans that we're going to be doing stuff. We had already planned that STARS is the perfect place to do those things. So as we started planning, that's what it was. This $2.9 million is on top of what we already receive. So really the only limiter here right now is bodies to work in order to be able to make those things happen. Because if you're able to expand that after school program and we have transportation afterwards, I don't want to say then we have students captive and we can be able to get more time with them to be able to do stuff. But really, as you'll hear from the community, you probably hear it all the time, transportation is our limiting factor. And especially if you've ever worked at a high school, if it's 3 o'clock and the bus is leaving and that's my way home, then I'm going. Doesn't matter if you need me in tutoring or after school. But if we can run a 5 o'clock bus when some of the pressure is off because you don't need as many running, you expand those learning opportunities, not just where we have them, but at Browns Valley, you put them at the high schools, then you have all of this stuff running afterwards. That's really what this money is to expand it into places where we wouldn't have been able to before.
Are there any restrictions on that money that we can use for transportation, since that's a big issue?
Yeah, there's money set aside. So in the expanded learning grant opportunity, when I did the planning for that financially, what we did is summer school this year was roughly about $1 million. Without going into all the details, we reserved another $1 million for next year. So we said we have this summer, we'll have a lot of data on what's happened during the year, and then we have next summer. So you've got that $1 million on both ends. And then what was left is kind of the expanded learning piece. We also pulled off an additional $1 million to say this is for transportation to run additional routes after school. And so I believe we had moved bus drivers to 8 hours. And as we're working with bus drivers and being able to get them on right now, and it seems like they're starting to come... Is Greg still here? No. Starting to come into the mix. As we're able to, then you can run your regular day routes and then be able to pay additional to keep people to run those 5 o'clock routes as well. Because right now you've got that pressure right at the start and end time where we're strapped on where it's at. But if you're to say, even if you staggered it and said 2 weeks we're going to be at this program, what you'll see is our teachers using time to be able to look at who needs remediation. So groups of teachers, and this pushes collaboration as well, they come together and they say, looking across the ninth grade, these kids all need this intervention. We'd like to assign you guys to be here for 4 weeks after school. We then route a bus that's able to do it. They come get that intervention. Transportation then takes them home. So, yes, transportation is an allowable expense. Again, the limiting factor for us is going to continue to be the bodies to be able to make it happen.
Thank you, Dr. Greco.
Any other comments or questions?
Thanks, Penny.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, Penny. I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Trustee Doug Criddle. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Hasty. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 5 yes. That is our last agenda item. I would like to close tonight's meeting and some of our former employees. First is Wilma Leverett. Wilma was a longtime employee for Marysville Joint Unified School District, both as a teacher and a counselor. Next is Alex Pappas. Alex was a teacher, a coach, a mentor in the district for many years, and he was also some of ours, baseball coach. Next, we have Lisa Mills. Lisa was an administrative assistant in the district for over 25 years. Next, Carl Patton. Carl was a principal of Linda Elementary School for many years. Our condolences to all the families from the board members. Meeting adjourned.